Good morning again. The founding and the continued success of Simon's Rock College of Bard is a realization of a particular vision of education. That vision includes a belief in the intellectual capacity of adolescents and a companion faith in the transformative power of liberal arts education. Students at Simon's Rock have always been and remain bright, diverse, and iconoclastic, with the willingness to expect and the ability to inspire profound change in the world. Our speaker today carries the hallmarks of such a Simon's Rock education. A 1977 alumnus of the college, Doug Ahlers has employed his intellectual curiosity, his entrepreneurial energy, and his personal integrity to influence events on both the national and international stage. In the process, he has modeled the ideals of participatory democracy and conscientious engagement. Doug's business career parallels the rise of technology and of e-commerce. The founder of Modern Media Incorporated, he has been involved in the development and deployment of online services since the early 1980s. His company was a pioneer in e-commerce, creating the first commercial website, the first advertisements on the internet, and indeed the first web page for the White House. That's the one in D.C. Not content to use his academic experience and technical and entrepreneurial skills only in the service of a personal business, Doug is a fellow of the National Democratic Institute, where he has lent his expertise to understand and support emerging democracies. As an NDI fellow, he has been on the front lines of the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine and worked as an election monitor in Palestine and in Egypt. He has examined the use of technology by international extremist organizations and hate groups, as well as dissident and opposition organizations in North Korea and in China. Doug is currently a fellow at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, where he is developing a book examining the role the internet plays in society and in politics. Most recently, Doug has been at the forefront of efforts to rebuild the city of New Orleans. A business owner and homeowner in the city, he has used his knowledge of New Orleans, his technical and organizational expertise, and his relationships in academe to bring business, government, academic, and civic organizations together to respond to the devastation of that city. Doug's life and work are the living realization of a notion first put forth by the late Stephen Jay Gould when he was speaking not only of evolution, which is his usual topic, but of human behavior. To paraphrase Gould, the patterns of human history mix decency and depravity in equal measure. We often assume that such a fine balance of results must emerge from societies made of decency and depravity in equal portions. But we need to expose and indeed celebrate the fallacy of this conclusion so that we may reaffirm an essential truth too easily forgotten and regain some crucial comfort too readily foregone. Good people outnumber all others by thousands to one. The tragedy of human history lies in the enormous potential for destruction in rare acts of evil. Complex systems can only be built step by step, whereas destruction requires but an instant. Thus, in what I like to call the great asymmetry, every spectacular incident of destruction will be balanced by 10,000 acts of creation. Doug Ahlers' life is an embodiment of the great asymmetry. Unsatisfied only with professional success, he put his technical expertise to work on behalf of emerging democracies. Believing that his academic work alone was insufficient to relieve suffering, he used his position at Harvard to bring technical, intellectual, and practical support to the city of New Orleans. Unwilling to accept his education as only a personal benefit, he serves as an active member of the Simon's Rock College Board of Overseers. It is my distinct honor to introduce today's commencement speaker, Mr. Douglas Ahlers.
Good morning. I want to speak to you today as one of you, as a fellow Simon's Rocker. It has been nearly 30 years, but it feels like just yesterday that I was where you are today. I suspect that I was invited to talk to you today because I have a propensity to turn up in the midst of events. whether it is part of the disaster and recovery in New Orleans, in Palestine as Hamas took power, standing in Independence Square in the Ukraine for the Orange Revolution, or being caught in a melee between Egyptian security forces and the Muslim Brotherhood. I would love to tell you that these things and other things that I've done in my life have been the result of some great master plan. But as Jamie Clark, who I was at Simon's Rock with back in the day, said to me, "You've really just Forrest Gumped your way through life, haven't you?" There is nothing like an old friend to keep you humble and keep you honest. For truth be told, instead of some heroic or brilliant action that put me in the right places at the right times, it was really more a case of naive bumbling that produced Forrest Gump-like moments where I just happened to be in historical events, more stunned and dazed than anything else. So how is it that I've had so many of these life adventures? I am a peripatetic soul. I am curious. I am precocious. I am like you. I am a Simon's Rocker. And all of my life adventures began here at Simon's Rock with this adventure. Which brings me to the thesis of my talk today, that Simon's Rock students are different. We are a special breed. We all have something in common. We all left home early and dove into life on an accelerated schedule. Somewhere inside of us, there must have been a fire burning, a passion, a need to move forward and dive into life and experience life, an undying curiosity. You have already done something bold and unexpected by coming to Simon's Rock. You have broken free of the norm. You and your families took a bold leap. Less than one-third of Americans aged 21 to 29 have a college degree. Just by this fact alone, you are already in a privileged group. But of all the students graduating from college this spring, only 20% or so are graduating from selective colleges. Like it or not, this puts you into an elite category. And of the students graduating from selective colleges this spring, only a tiny percent are graduating early. As graduates of Simon's Rock today, you represent an extremely privileged group. And to paraphrase from Spider-Man, with great privilege comes great responsibility. Because we as Simon's Rock students are unique, and our mission at Simon's Rock is distinctive, it imbues us with a particular responsibility. You have been given an unusually rich educational and personal experience here. And now it is your responsibility to use those opportunities in service to the world. And there is much that needs to be done in this world. I do not mean to mar this day of joyful celebration, but pain and suffering around the world do not take a holiday. By the time I finish this sentence, another child will have died of malaria somewhere around the world. In the next minute, 10 children will have died of starvation, while another 850 million people will go malnourished. In this minute, 6 people will have died of AIDS, one of which will be a child under the age of 15. The AIDS pandemic has produced 15 million orphans, 12 million in sub-Saharan Africa alone. As we sit here, genocide in Darfur continues. 200,000 have already been slaughtered. Wars, corruption, poverty, disease, political oppression, human rights abuses, genocide, and human trafficking leave much of the world's population without hope. But one does not have to roam far to find poverty, suffering, inequities, and injustice. Here in the United States, 35 million people live below the poverty line. In pre-Katrina New Orleans, nearly a third of all children lived in poverty. Their condition has only gotten worse. I have been doing a lot of work in New Orleans since September, and I have to tell you that it is heartbreaking and sobering that after 8 months, almost nothing has changed. The news cycle has moved on, and many Americans assume that things are better. But the reality is that virtually no progress has been made. 60% of the population of New Orleans, about 275,000 people, are still displaced. Put in context of a city a little closer to home, the number of New Orleanians still not back in their city would be equivalent to nearly half the population of the city of Boston. And yet, virtually nothing has been done to rebuild homes, hospitals, schools, or businesses. 144 square miles of New Orleans remains largely an eerie ghost town. The reality is far worse than the pictures on CNN can capture. Part of the problem is the enormity of the devastation. If it were Boston, it would be all of the city limits of Boston, all of the city of Cambridge, all of Brookline, and all of Newton. 100,000 homes, most schools, stores, and hospitals simply lay abandoned. In even the most repopulated of these areas, only 15 to 20% of the residents have returned. And for these people, government at all levels has abandoned them. It is a mess beyond comprehension. Nothing I could possibly have imagined could have prepared me for what I have seen. Movies that portray life in post-nuclear conflict only begin to hint at what life is like in catastrophes like these. One of my most vivid memories is in mid-October driving down what had once been a major commercial thoroughfare. I was the only person in a ghostly landscape of cars dangling from trees and rows of what looked to be like bomb-blasted houses. I stopped my car, for there in the middle of the street was a small starved dog, a few weeks ago someone's beloved pet. He looked up at me with eyes that will forever haunt me. The eyes mirrored my own feelings. They begged me to help him. They were filled with sadness and fear and questioning. They asked, "What happened? Where is everybody?" Those eyes contained every emotion of the devastation, shock, terror, horror, and questioning for what is to become of us. When I tried to go help him, he staggered off into the rubble, leaving me alone in my search to find understanding and meaning of it all. Some of you here at Simon's Rock have gone to New Orleans to help over intercession and alternative spring break. You know what I mean. For those who have seen the devastation and have spent time grappling with it, the only words that can be used to describe it are of biblical proportions and apocalyptic. The naked truth is that a major American city has been destroyed. And the worst truth is that no one really cares. An illustration of just how little we care is the fact that we have not even bothered to collect the dead. After 8 months, we are still pulling bodies out of the rubble. There are still over 1,000 homes yet to be searched. The extent of our efforts for search and recovery is one search team with only two cadaver dogs. 17 bodies have been found since March. A few weeks ago, the remains of a 6-year-old girl were found, left there for 8 months until someone bothered to look. The United States is a big country, so we can be far removed from the unpleasantries. And as it turns out, most people want to distance themselves from such things. Sure, it is true that faraway things are out of sight, out of mind. But something deeper is happening here. The kind of devastation, the total destruction of an American city, just is not supposed to happen here. It is not supposed to happen to us. Life is not supposed to be that fragile. People just do not want to face something that large and that ghastly. And so we sweep New Orleans under the rug as if it never happened, or its variation of pretending the problem is not as bad as it is. and pretending that the problem has magically fixed itself, as if by ignoring pain and suffering, we can simply will them away. Edward R. Murrow once said, "Most truths are so naked that people feel sorry for them and try and cover them up, at least a little bit." So it is incumbent on you, the few who have been trained to think critically, to question, to inquire, it is incumbent upon you to look upon these truths, to face them, to see their nakedness, and to not allow yourselves or others to cover them up, at least even a little bit. It is a reality and a fact that there are many things wrong in the world, awful, inhuman, cruel, and unjust, and we as citizens of the world cannot sit idly by. The most important piece of advice that I have for you today is to not be a bystander. Emerson wrote, "I will not shut myself out from this globe of action and transplant an oak into a flower pot there to hunger and pine. I run eagerly into the resounding tumult. I grasp the hands of those next to me and take my place in the ring. I urge you to take your place in the ring. I urge you to follow a course of action in life to make a difference. But this will not be easy. The path of action in the world is flanked on one side by complacency and on the other by fear. Complacency and its stepchildren, indifference and apathy, turn us into bystanders in life. Or worse, our remaining mute turns us into co-conspirators. But fear can be even more crippling than complacency. It turns otherwise engaged people back in their tracks. A friend once told me that FEAR is an acronym, F-E-A-R. FEAR is an acronym with one of two meanings. The first is F everything and run. This is the flight response, required for survival, a necessary and a good thing. The second acronym is false events appearing real. This is an unnecessary kind of fear, a fear that can be so debilitating. I have found that my friend's advice has come in quite handy in life. I use it whenever I confront a situation that makes me fearful. I use it as a test to see which kind of fear it is. And other than facing a grizzly bear in the Alaska woods, being tear gassed by charging security forces, or having a hurricane bear down on my home, every case of fear that has gripped me has been of the variety of false events appearing real. Worries and concerns that I've built up in my own mind, fears that were imagined, but had all the power and force as if they were towering grizzlies blocking my path. For example, when I faced the ruins of New Orleans, it would be so much easier for me to just walk away. But I elect to stay and face my fears, not out of courage, but because I could not live with myself if I did not. As Mark Twain said, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you did not do than by the things that you did do. Today, as you graduate, you are part of something that has stretched 40 years before you and will stretch well into the future, well beyond me. Simon's Rock is no ordinary school. It is a bold experiment. The community that exists here, that you have been part of, does not end when you leave this campus. It stays in your heart, it stays in your intellect, it stays in your soul. No one can ever take that away from you. You are now and will always be a Simon's Rocker. But remember that with community comes responsibility. Responsibility to your friends, your family, and your fellow rockers. Responsibility to the future of Simon's Rock and future generations of Simon's Rockers. And most importantly, responsibility to the world community. To quote JFK, "For those to whom much is given, much is required." Mark Twain once said, "There are 1,440 minutes in every day, yours to use as you see fit, to wander, to learn, to waste, to build." We didn't make this world, but perhaps we can make it a little better than it was when we came into it. It's all up to you. And so, let me finally say, congratulations on your graduation and good luck with your lives.
The world is a better place because Douglas